confidence that a new world can be built. And by the way,
we have
the
10
consciousness
seconds,
in the North is not there either.
We have 10 seconds.
Yeah, I'm just saying the consciousness in the northern countries not there either as of yet. Trump's tariffs trying to reverse this trend, not going to work.
We have to leave it there. Vijay Prashad, director of Tricontinental. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
As a pedestrian, you see headlights, but that doesn't mean the driver sees you. When walking at dawn, dusk, or after dark, make sure to be seen by oncoming traffic. Walk facing traffic. Wear light-colored, light-reflective clothing. Carry a bright light so drivers can see you. Use crosswalks. See and be seen. Pedestrian safety. It's no accident.
That's right. And hopefully it's not an accident that you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. We broadcast at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. Spread the word and show your support. WUSB.FM. The time is just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, which means once again, it's time for another episode of Off the Wall. That's right. I say that's right because that music speaks, and it just said something, and I agree with it. It's Off the Wall. Emmanuel here, Kyle over there.
Hey, homie.
How you doing?
I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah.
How are you?
Oh, you know, making do, getting by, doing the best I can. I think that's about as much as we can ask for our listeners.
I was going to say, is that all you've got? But
it's all I've got.
What you've got, and we're glad you're here. The radio program is off the wall. And
I mentioned that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we talk about everything. And we make jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes there's levity. Uh-huh. Sometimes there's moments of grave seriousness.
Uh-huh, that's true, too.
And sometimes we recap for like 40 minutes about what happened over the weekend.
Sometimes we spend the whole hour clarifying the last week's show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, answering our own questions about our own comments.
At the request of various authorities.
Mm-hmm.
This week I'd like to start off by addressing, it's not an elephant in the room, but if it were an elephant, it would be one. And that's this can of boiled peanuts that's been sitting in front of me now for well over a year. Kyle, I think I want to get this over with. For those who don't know, this is, picture a can of Campbell's soup. It's about the same size. It's heavier. It's got one of those pop-open tops like soda cans used to have. It makes this sound when you shake it. I don't know what's in there, but I guess it's boiled peanuts in something liquidy.
Yeah, they're suspended in a brine of sorts.
I got this at a gas station in the Deep South. I don't know what I was thinking.
It was right around a year ago.
It was, yeah, when we went to see the eclipse.
We had fun. I mean, I get travel stress like you would not believe.
Mm-hmm.
And people, if you are a traveler, you may have experienced this. You haven't realized it's a thing. But you have to look out for yourself when you're traveling. You can have the best laid plans or not. You can be totally flying by the seat of your pants, but either way, you could succumb to it, and it's a real thing. But it's always interesting how, looking back, you remember how fun it was to be out on the road, how fun it was to be on an adventure, to have some excitement ahead of you. So whatever form of transportation, even if you're just going around the block, if you're checking in on people, visiting, being social in the nice weather, be on that adventure, because you'll look back, you'll be happy to have ventured out, so to speak.
Even the bad times, what you perceive as the bad times, they turn out to be the ones you remember.
It's what gets me in the moment is I get so frustrated with where I want to be and what I want to be up to, what better arrangements could have been made. So a lot of times I get really down about not knowing people where we're going. We often have traveled. We've traveled a lot, but we don't know anyone where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets really, really depressing. It's really hard if you're traveling by yourself, but even with a colleague, with someone who you travel with frequently, sometimes you can kind of retreat into your own sort of entertainment and amusement along the way. And it is nice, when you're venturing out to visit friends or visit family in the summer or springtime here, to know that people are waiting for you. They're excited that you might show up. They want to show you something about where they are. And that's authentic. That's the best stuff. I don't think you can fabricate it, but you can certainly plan for it. And we've watched some adventure shows and stuff that they kind of force it a little bit, and it is planned out. You know, there's a lot of, like, stops and things that are produced.
Well, they have a camera crew, a budget, and microphones and cars and things like that.
And
so, yeah, they have to plan it.
Schedules and budgets,
We don't have to do that, and you don't have to do that.
You don't have to do that, but it is... It is not unusual to have uneasy feelings, especially when you're exposed. You're kind of, if you're traveling alone, if you don't have anyone that you know that's there, and maybe you don't speak the language. Although there are better tools now with the phone translation and stuff, it's actually really, really amazing on some of the new handsets. But I have to like consciously suppress that when I'm on an adventure like that, because I get really wrapped up in where I'm at in my life, what I want to do, you know, why am I here? What am I even doing? This is just crazy. You know, we're often in crazy circumstance. You have to adjust. Travel takes so much flexibility, and it is trying, and it's a challenge, and it is good, ultimately, I think, very good for your brain as far as problem solving, but gosh, can it be hard when you're doing it to stay excited about it? Because you're like, oh, this is up to me. I can do whatever I want. But, you know, I'm in transit for this particular activity, trying to make connections. It isn't necessarily always the walk in the park that you idealize it as.
No, and it shouldn't be either. But, you know, the one thing I learned fairly early on, this is my first overseas trip back in 1989. If you are comfortable traveling by yourself, there's nothing you can't do. I went over to Europe and didn't know a single person and came back knowing a whole lot of people. But the important thing is you're able to just say, I want to go here today without consulting with anybody. Get on a bus, get on a train, just decide to do something different, make mistakes, meet different people. There's definitely advantages to having people waiting for you and meeting up with, but those are obligations. And if you want no obligations whatsoever, you know, hit the road and do what you can. But it takes a lot. It takes a lot to be comfortable by yourself.
Yeah, I'm kind of like outlining that trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
You can plan all that stuff, but then there are, like, obligations. But I guess my takeaway is, like, I've never looked back and been like, oh, I'm mad that I did that. Or, like, I'm never upset for having done it, but in the moment I can remember how hard it was to be in the experience and enjoying it for what it is and not putting my mind elsewhere, trying to be like, oh, I should be doing this, I should be doing that, like, second-guessing your own sense of it. It doesn't mean I don't have other adventures waiting for me or that I'm not that I'm averse to it in the future. It's just it takes a really long time when you commit to those things
mm-hmm.
to kind of work around to getting in those things that on those trips you tell yourself, hey, I should really get to that thing I wanted to do. It can be really daunting to strike out and set that up for yourself. Because you only thought of it like a year ago on a trip when you were frustrated, you weren't doing something else with your time because it was getting stressful.
Yeah. Well, if you have the opportunity, I suggest going for it and just seeing what happens. These days, it's a lot easier to keep in touch with people through social networks and that kind of stuff. I don't know how I did it back then because, you know, we didn't have internet connectivity to go make, you know, reservations someplace to stay. You had to pretty much figure it out as you were hanging out there, phone calls, you know, with calling cards and things like that, my calling cards, by the way, and they were a fortune, you know, to call up and see what was available in a particular town that I happened to be staying in, or finding airfare or boat fare or train fare. It was a real challenge, so it's gotten easier on many levels. It's gotten cheaper on many levels, too, so it's definitely worth checking out. But throughout this whole thing, I'm still holding the can of boiled peanuts that I got last year, and when I'm, you know, this is kind of heavy. What I aim to do, I think, unless somebody tells me otherwise, is open this next week on the air. What do you think, Kyle?
You keep pushing it back a week.
Well, now I'm pushing it to next week. I don't think I ever said a specific week.
All right. I'm not going to hold you to it, but I'm actually impressed it's in your hands.
It's in my hands.
You're holding the can.
Listen to this. That's how loud it is when you slam it on. I didn't even slam it. That was its own weight hitting the table.
There are instructions for, like, reheating it or whatever, but, I mean, what are you going to do with the leftover? You're not going to eat the entire
thing. Oh, but you don't think I'll finish?
Well,
I'll share, Kyle.
Should we get a container to
boil can have a boiled peanut party.
Are we going to heat them up after, or are you just going to have one and then we're going to throw it out?
I have no idea what's in here. I don't know what's in. They say boiled peanuts. It could be a bunch of rocks. I don't know. It just says the South's favorite snack. Pop open and enjoy.
And what if we need something to, like, sustain us when we can no longer get fresh peanuts?
You mean like a paramedic or something? I don't know what to expect here.
Like a disaster situation. Maybe that needs to come with us on our next adventure. And we might need it because we can't find lodging or something.
I'm gonna read the description here because it begs more detail. The South's favorite snack. Remember stopping for boiled peanuts on those family road trips, tailgating, and get-togethers? No, honestly, Tin Can, I can't remember any of that. That was not my life. This is your life. Please describe it to me. Now you can enjoy slow kettle-cooked peanut patch. I don't know if that's a brand. I guess it is a brand. I'm sorry for giving out a brand name. From our thousands of convenience store kettles. Convenience store kettles, and food store cans anywhere, anytime. okay, so this is a food store can that I have, but apparently you can get convenience store kettles, whatever that is. And then there were a bunch of instructions and offers and things like that. The important thing, though, is the expiration date.
All right. Well,
I can ask you to look for the expiration date.
Obviously. I accept your challenge.
Yeah. Well, it's not much of a challenge. I'm going to open a can and try not to get sick.
October 6, 2025. So okay. You have a couple months.
I have some time.
You should make good on that.
I just want it out of the way. I keep hitting it with my hand, and it's heavy, as I mentioned. All right, so that's on the agenda. Next, some of you in the area, and I'm talking about those of you in the 631 area, might have gotten angry last week. Did you get angry last week? Do you remember what you got angry about? Well, it seems everybody within a 50-mile radius got a late-night phone call at 12:30 at night from the Suffolk County Police. A late-night robocall, and apparently it angered a whole lot of Suffolk County residents. They describe it as a rare occurrence. I'm sure that doesn't comfort you in the slightest, but according to the cops, they don't do this very often. In fact, most people don't do this very often. The automated notification went out as part of the countywide Silver Alert system. And part of what the county once called the Code Red program, but is now known as a reverse 911 notification. Did you know about reverse 911 notifications, Kyle?
Not really. I mean,
it's like when you call the cops, but they call you instead. That's all I can figure out from that. And I guess they call everybody. They can do that. Did you know they could? I didn't know they could do that. I didn't know they could just push a button and call everybody in an area. And did they call all numbers regardless of whether or not they were connected? Or do they have a listing of all of us? Did they, you know, can they address us by name if so desired? Did they call cell phones? Did they call the university? Did they call dormitories? Did they call offices that were closed? Did they call themselves? You know, I have a lot of questions here. They say usually those calls only involve landline users. Oh, one of my questions is being answered. In a specific notification area and generally don't go out overnight. Okay, a couple of points. If you don't include cell phones, you're not calling most people because most people don't have landlines anymore. Does the Suffolk County Police not know this? And I realize area codes don't necessarily say where you are, so that's a problem as well. It's kind of outdated technology. You'd need to know what cell phones are in the area, even if they have a 415 area code, and call those. In this case, the automated calls, which some residents said woke them up overnight Thursday into Friday, involved an alert about a missing nonverbal autistic teen. And here's the thing. They found that teen a little before they made the calls. I'm not kidding. They found the teen around 12 o'clock, and they made the calls around 12:30. It was all for naught. Yeah, but it was fun, wasn't it? It was a shared experience that many people had. One person said, "After I almost had a heart attack from my landline ringing at 12:45 a.m., I checked my Ring app and saw people talking there about getting the same call." My landline hasn't rung past 9 p.m. unless it was a family emergency in literally years. My landline has not rung in literally years. I miss those days, Kyle. I miss the days when the landline would ring almost every day, or even many times a day, and you never knew who was on the other end.
Yeah, I loved talking on the phone.
Yeah, I still love talking on the phone.
I still do, yeah, but people don't talk, and it actually makes me incredibly sad, and I think it's leading to a crisis of loneliness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's something that definitely has been noted. I don't get it. I don't know why people aren't interested in having conversations. Is it a question of time? Is it a question of popularity?
I don't know. You should be so lucky as to have a phone call with me or you.
That's right. And if you get the both of us on the phone at the same time, my God.
Yeah.
You know, pinch yourself.
Yeah, I was.
Wouldn't that be a good premium for the radio station? But what do we value ourselves at?
No. I'm not selling phone calls for the station. The station has enough of me. Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
$10,000, Kyle.
WUSB Stony Brook. $10,000. No, I don't want to talk to people that badly. and I am not offering that.
They're not people. They're listeners. Oh, wait, that came out wrong. Okay, but the point is...
They can write us letters.
You know, most people don't have phones anyway, so...
I'm talking about personal phone calls.
Yes. I like personal phone calls.
Let's keep it personal, not professional, or, you know, whatever. The important thing is check in on people. You never know what they're facing.
Very true.
And a phone is a great way to do that.
I remember, you know, it was different. I mean, a lot of people probably don't even realize this. But now you know every time somebody calls who they are. You know, you just say, oh, that's Brad. I'm not going to talk to him today. But when the phone rang when I was a child, first of all, it was a big, loud ring. Second of all, you didn't own the phone. The phone company owned the phone. That's a whole other kettle of fish. But when you picked it up, you had no idea who was going to be on the other end. Was it good news? Was it bad news? Was it a wrong number? Was it somebody from far away? Was it somebody down the block? And it was always something to look forward to. You know, it was an event.
I can recognize that. I'm a little nervous. I don't want us to turn into the nowadays segment on Off the Wall.
Yeah, but kids today, they just don't get it.
Oh, gosh.
All right.
It's so creaky and frumpy. And
well, no, on that subject. By the way, you've reached your allocation of use of the word frumpy for the rest of the year.
Oh my gosh!
Speaking of people that say these kids today, I want you to actually look at my laptop, Kyle, because I have a picture.
No, I'm not. Help yourself.
Well, I'm going to unplug. I can unplug it, right? It's not going to
Google it.
It's not going to take the radio station off the air if I unplug this, right? I have two plugs here.
Do whatever you want.
It doesn't
live your life, girl.
Wait, no, this. No, that doesn't feed into that, does it? This has no effect on that. No, of course
only
not.
Only if you're playing something. You're
okay.
Fine.
Yeah, I just unplugged
do
it.
Do you.
I unplugged it on the air, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Look at these people in the crowd there. And would you say those people are particularly friendly to having a marijuana dispensary in their neighborhood?
No.
No, those are the people who showed up at the Islip town meeting last week. And what did you do?
They all look like they have acid reflux.
Uh-huh. There, it's back. Yeah, it's basically, I don't want to judge people. I don't want to judge people by the way they look. But you got a senior citizen there with his arms folded who looks angry. I don't think he's there to extol the virtues of smoking a joint. I just don't. And I see a lot of disapproving looking women. I don't see any young people at all. You know, you got to show up to these things if you want to get something happening, if you want to have any kind of progress whatsoever. The result of this, and this is a meeting we announced. Sorry, that was me plugging my laptop back in.
Yeah.
Basically, they're going to table this now. They were going to approve it. They were going to approve dispensaries in Islip Town, which they had opted out of for as long as marijuana has been legal in New York State. They saw how much money other towns were bringing in, other counties upstate, ton of money. No significant problems as far as kids getting access or crime in the streets or anything like that. In fact, a decrease in those problems. Now, because they don't want this kind of behavior in their neighborhood, we're going to have to wait till July to have another meeting. And hopefully younger people or just more enlightened people or people just with different opinions will show up and give their perspective. Because what I see here just looks like a bunch of angry people that are basically saying, not in my backyard. And I hate to judge based on the way it looks. But that's what happened. That's what they wound up with.
They just want to stay broke, I guess. I think people just need to to feel power because they feel powerless. So if they want to go and, like, espouse lies and keep their town broke, then I guess that's what the town wants. And I know young people... Look, young people are put upon for a lot. They work hard. They aren't really worth anything. I mean, they're just starting out. They can barely find work in some cases. They're not quite experienced enough to let other citizens know, you know, what's really going on. And now we have to, like, come and have, we have to, like, get young people to come in and advocate against that. I just think that let them get the power trip out of their system, and yeah, maybe come back in the summer and some people will set them straight. But I don't know. I've evolved a little bit personally, and I think that, like, I now that it's legal, it's kind of like and ubiquitous. I'm less interested. And also the times, there's so many really absurd things that are going to affect people, in my opinion, like very quickly. I kind of can't check out, or I can't like I can't party like that, because there's too much stuff that is actually really affecting people I care about and the world. So I think that'll figure itself out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care if that town makes money. There are other towns that are doing it in New York. If they want to be frumpy, they can do that.
Okay, you're over the limit. I warned you. Do not use the word frumpy anymore. But okay, you raise good points. But I don't think money should be the key point here, because it's about more than that. I mean, yeah, you lose out on a significant amount of income, but it's also, this is legal for a reason. It's legal because it's been proven safe. It's certainly not as dangerous as a lot of the things that are illegal that we don't have hearings about. And it's tremendously beneficial for people with all kinds of medical issues. Not people looking to check out, people who are just looking to get through the day, relieve pain, relax, sleep well, all kinds of things like that. And you get educated on this because the people in dispensaries really know their stuff. I mean, I saw an article about the kinds of people who are working in dispensaries these days. They're not just people they find off the street. These are people with degrees. You know, people who have studied all kinds of related material and know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I'm envious. I'm really kind of jealous of this, because this was, I mean, being drug tested, having this cloud following you around and trying to navigate new adult life and still, like, reduce inflammation and take care of yourself or smoke a little bit for stress or other whatever perceived benefit. That was a constant balance when I was starting out, when I was a so-called young person who wasn't really worth much yet and like kind of new and, you know, navigating hard work. It had to be something that was in the shadows. It made operating, doing normal things, full of paranoia. And I think a lot of that took its toll on me personally. So to see young people actually have options, if they're passionate about plants or if they're passionate about cannabis specifically, that's incredible. I wish I'd grown up into a world like that. I forced it. I forced it all around me, and mm-hmm. I definitely advocated for it as much as I could. But that is yet another cool thing I was into that I missed the boat on.
I wouldn't say you missed the boat, because the boat is here for everybody to board. And when we say young people, we're talking about people in their 20s.
Yeah, maybe a side gig. I'll just, I'll be a bud barista
maybe.
Or whatever
you,
they have.
I mean, that's something that you can do. But, you know, there is a lot of what I consider to be ignorance. For instance, the Bayshore Chamber of Commerce. They unanimously voted to oppose this this policy, saying financial gain should not come at the cost of public health, safety, and the character of our community. You know, I'd like more details. Bayshore, I'd like more details as to what you mean by public health. People are becoming healthier by taking what is known as medicine in many cases. Safety, you could not ask for more safety than the kind of education that you get in a place where people know what they're talking about and don't dispense it to people under 21.
Yeah, right. I'd like to know more about the character part.
And the character. What do you mean character? What kind of people don't you want on your streets? You know, what are you talking about
people
here?
That prance around with scarves and do interpretive dance on the sidewalk.
Yeah,
okay, I'm going to say it. I'm switching it up.
Uh-huh.
This is stodginess.
Okay, that's a good word.
Yeah.
You have
they're
a limited amount of use of that word.
Stodgy.
Okay, stodgy is a good word.
But
I have a certain view as to the character of the Bayshore Chamber of Commerce. What kind of people? What kind of people those are? Maybe we don't need those people around.
Yeah, they're lacking.
All right, how about
but
this?
I think that you're right. It is about access. It's about safe access. It's about putting ID checks into place and diluting the black market.
Mm-hmm.
Straight up. You have got to do that. Just pull the stilts out from under that, get it across the board, accessible, local, really high quality, really good quantities and at a price that's affordable, and educate people, and make the edibles boring so no one touches them. Gosh, I can't say that enough. Edibles are so much different. You got to be educated about how you use all these things.
Yeah, and I am dead set opposed to the kind of edibles that look like candy or look like anything children would be interested
in.
But
the more
that's a bad idea, and many people in the community are very opposed to that.
The more it's available, people be more apt, I think, to just minimize or otherwise moderate their use, because it's available. You don't need to stock up. You don't need to be worried or in a frenzy about it. If it's just going and picking up any other groceries.
Why did you say it like that?
Because groceries is apparently a hard word for some people, but it should be that way. And then I think people will be able to get back to life, and actually living their lives, not worried or paranoid, or, you know, we'll have criteria for all of this. It'll create some source of revenue. We can get on and do other things.
I just realized marijuana that's sold in New York State legally is grown in New York State. Therefore, it's not subject to tariffs of any sort. So think about that. You know, eggs might be through the roof because of bird flu, but marijuana is actually coming down in price.
This should just be a very boring issue.
I'd like to. It is a boring issue.
Yeah, it should be every day, another city has finally figured out that they don't want to be broke.
Let's just go through a couple more comments so that we can get through this. I want to make sure that our children don't have access to cannabis products.
I don't know if... Well, I mean, I want to make sure when they're children they don't have access, but when they're... After when they're done being children, yes,
okay.
I want them to have access. I want them to have safe access.
I'm glad you agree with that statement, Kyle, because it was made by the president of the Long Island Cannabis Coalition. Yes, who does not want children to have access to cannabis products. I want to make sure illicit shops are shut down in our town. Legal cannabis retail, weird sentence, addresses many of those issues. Cannabis retail shops are mandated by the state to prevent access to children. People in alleyways are not. And you have less people in alleyways when you have legal shops. When is the last time you bought moonshine on the street? You know, there's a reason that's hard to do, because it's legal to buy alcohol. And there are many places where you can do that. But it's so much more easy. And that's kind of wrong. You know, you can buy alcohol in 7-Eleven. You can, you know, have bars next to other bars. And people drive drunk all the time. And it's a horrible thing. And we need to focus more attention on that.
I think issues of quality, too. I mean, the illicit shops don't necessarily pass the same testing standards. They don't necessarily have as much control over how things are grown and the refined products, if they're contaminated anyway. And if people are using it for as a medicinal supplement to other things they ingest, they should be able to trust that it is of that quality. I have a friend that is suffering from MS back in the Northwest, and they drank a little bit, okay, a lot, but they've, I think, tempered that a little bit, and had always smoked cannabis, but now they're able to get things that are highly concentrated to help with some of the symptoms of a disease they're facing that is quite scary, but it, I think, has helped them with their mood, helped them with being able to get an immediate high or an immediate effect of something. I think they're able to easily just go and buy a 90% waxes and things that you can vaporize to get just a very high concentration of THC, and that helps them. And then they're done. You know, they do a little bit of that and they're able to, you know, wheel around and deal with their life and challenges day to day. And I want that to be something that's totally normal, that they can just go get whatever they need at the best quality, the best concentrations for their situation, and get back to living their lives, you know, having meals and taking care of themselves. And I think that's the undertone of some of these people that are refusing. They're holding up all these hypotheticals and not actually appreciating the real stories that people have about this stuff being in their lives and taking the stigma away and how they use it and how much harder their life would be or how much more uncomfortable they would be in dealing with symptoms of a disease or just day-to-day stress or something if they didn't have that kind of access. So it's really, to me, about high quality. If you have a healthy market, it's homegrown, it's grown in the state, you're supporting a myriad of support industries and expertise, and people should have, like, good quality New York cannabis. Like, it just, it shouldn't, that's why I keep saying it should be boring. Like, it should just be something that's there if you need it, if you're interested in it, but only if you're of age and if you have, like, the right kind of information about what products do what and how to use it safely. And we try on the airwaves here, we have a lot of PSAs and things that we've helped organize. We try to get public information out there, especially for younger drivers, people that might be new to this and not have as much experience and not also have as much paranoia as you did back in the olden days. I think that disinhibition can be dangerous because when you're driving, when you're in chaotic situations, you need to have your wits about you, and that's kind of what I've been doing personally. But everybody has different things going on at different times, so check in on people, check in with yourself, and let's spread good information so that these cities have safe access, and that's it. It's done, and there's a way to do it in their town, and then we can get on with our lives. It's not like some ongoing saga.
And if you want to participate in that meeting in July, I don't have the exact details. I do have a notice of a town board meeting in Islip in July, which is scheduled for July 15th. That's a Tuesday at 2 p.m. Hey, we could make it and still make the show. But actually, probably not, because people talk for a long time. It goes well into the evening. So that's probably when the meeting is, July 15th, 2 p.m., 401 Main Street, Town Hall West. I imagine that's in Islip. They also have a planning board meeting the next day at 6 p.m. I'm not sure if that's where they're talking about this. I think it's a town board. But as we find out more, we will let you know. And, you know, it'd be good to see a variety of viewpoints represented rather than a monolithic no, you know, which is what we're used to in Long Island.
Yeah, and one guy who has a story about his dog getting into something. Like, that is not testimony.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep your pets away from it.
You know, if people in other parts of the country were this negative towards their guns, we'd be living in a safer country for sure. But I don't want to bring that up because we'll be talking for the rest of the night. Okay, something else on the schedule, which is pretty awesome. Right here at Stony Brook tomorrow, April 23rd, 6:30 p.m., West Campus Engineering Building, room 145, a free screening of No Other Land, the Academy Award-winning documentary film about the Palestinian occupation in the West Bank and the story of how a particular town is being destroyed by Israeli soldiers. Fascinating film, really educational. You know, people accuse it of being one-sided. It's a film about somebody's town getting destroyed. You're not going to be having tea with the army soldiers that do that, no. But you are going to see firsthand what happens. Without commentary, you're going to see for yourself. And you can draw your own conclusions, but there's not a thing that's anti-Semitic or any other nonsense that you've heard about this. The real crime is the fact that it's so hard to see this film. The real crime is that if a theater shows it, they get all kinds of threats. You know, in Miami, they tried to shut down the theater that showed this film after it was shown. They cannot get a distributor in this country. I mean, are we, you know, open to freedom of speech or not? Or is it just some freedom of speech? This is something that is happening. It's not being made up. It's not fiction. It's real. And the only way that we can get past it is if we confront it, if we talk about it, if we debate. And that is hugely important. And boy, you know, there are a huge number of groups, like a dozen groups, that have pulled together. I don't know what it took to get this film here. Wow, the Department of Asian and Asian American Studies, Asian American Justice and Innovation Lab, the Center for Changing Systems of Power, the Department of Africana Studies, the Department of History, East End for Peace, Long Island Activist, Long Island Progressive Coalition, North Country Peace Group, New York Progressive Action Network, Progressive East End Reformers. Did you know there are so many groups around? Yeah. And if they can all pool resources to bring this one film to an audience at Stony Brook, imagine, you know, what else can be done. So I'm not sure exactly if you need to register. I can imagine it's probably full by now. But I'm giving you the details. It's taking place tomorrow night, Wednesday, April 23rd, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. West Campus, which is the main campus, the engineering building. It's a red brick building, room 145, which is kind of like an auditorium. You can see more details, calendar.stonybrook.edu, and find it there. And I'd love to hear from people who attend this. It really, Kyle and I saw the film a couple of weeks ago. We had to make some pirate connections in order to be able to see it, because you can't get it in this country. You cannot get it. If you try to get it from Amazon in a different country, they won't let you download it unless you get a foreign credit card and go through all kinds of challenges. It's a documentary. It's an Academy Award-winning documentary. It should be seen. It should be seen. And I am super proud of Stony Brook for doing this, because that's what an academic institution is all about. It's too bad a lot of academic institutions seem to have forgotten that and seem to think it's just about the endowments and about not causing controversy and about not making enemies of powerful people. If you don't do those things, you're doing something wrong. So, and, you know, when I went to Stony Brook, there were all kinds of controversial things going on. So it's good to see some traditions still hold true. All right, you know, our Defense Department, it's been compromised. Did you know this, Kyle? Not by the Chinese, not by the Russians, by a guy. By a guy. Imagine you have a bunch of people over to see a football game on Sunday. One of those guys, maybe the guy that had a little bit too much to drink, and you have to, you know, call somebody to get him out of your house. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, that's the guy. We've heard all kinds of things about him over the last few weeks. We heard things before he was confirmed as Defense Secretary. We heard about the signal snafu, where basically he invited, or he didn't invite, but he was part of a call and ran the call that included an editor of The Atlantic, who was able to see all these secret plans for bombing Yemen. Turns out there was another call that this time he invited people. He invited his wife. He invited his brother. He invited his lawyer to talk about secret plans from the other call. Yes. This is just unbelievable. He basically...
It's not just secret plans. It's killing people.
It's like, killing people.
Let's be real.
He's like humble
bragging in a group chat about killing people.
He took the information about airstrikes that he had posted into the signal chats, you know, the first ones, basically from a secure communication. Okay, first of all, he was in a secure communications channel used by U.S. Central Command. He pulled that and brought that into a signal chat that had the people that I just referred to, along with dozens of others.
Wait, like a screenshot or something?
I don't know exactly how he did it. Clumsily, I'm sure. It raises new questions as to, you know, whether you should do that and whether this guy has any clue whatsoever what he's doing. This is dangerous. This is really dangerous behavior.
Is that the Times piece about the DOD?
This is every piece about it.
Okay, because I just skimmed it. I was like, oh, my God. I just went paragraph to paragraph, like, how bad it is. And I was like, yeah, that checks out. I just stopped reading after a while.
He has aggressively denied that the information he posted was classified. But regardless, Signal is a commercially available app that is encrypted but is not a government network. Not authorized to carry classified information. He said with Fox News, I said repeatedly, nobody is texting war plans. I look at war plans every day. What was shared over Signal then and now, however you characterize it, was informal, unclassified coordinations for media coordinations and other things. That's what I've said from the beginning. Based on the specificity? Okay.
Specificity.
All right, of the launch times, that information would have been classified. According to former Defense Secretary, careful, you might have heard of him, Leon Panetta, he told this to the Associated Press. The Associated Press that I think still hasn't been let back into the White House despite a court ruling. Yeah, these are the times we're in. It's unheard of to have a Secretary of Defense committing these kinds of serious security breaches, Panetta said. He was also director of the CIA during Obama's term, by the way.
I know.
This guy knows what he's talking about. Developing attack plans for defensive reasons is without question the most classified information you can have. It wasn't just classified. It was the most classified. This guy, you know, this is what we found out about. Can you imagine what he's doing that we don't know about? And what he has access to? The danger that he can put this entire nation into, and you know, maybe even the entire world. But, you know, are you surprised? People were warning about this from the very beginning when this name was brought up as a nominee.
Yeah, this is case in point for everyone that was like, this guy's maybe not the number one choice. He's kind of a low performer. I had better operational security when I was a teenager, you know, sneaking out or doing whatever, going to all ages punk shows or whatever. You know, it's just, it's kind of, it's disappointing. And I keep thinking of when things get, when some emergency or crisis really happens, where are they? Like, they're not competent enough to be serious.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all their, like, pet projects. They're doing all this stuff that is, I guess, making good on their threats to scare everyone. But are they actually responsibly directing the military? It's just, it instills zero faith. And I think it's pathetic. I don't know. I don't want that job, but I think there's a lot of people that could do a better job.
Almost anybody could do a better job. That's true. I don't want the job either, but I know plenty of people who do. Not personally, although I probably do. It should be given to somebody who can handle it. This guy cannot handle it. He has proven this. Consider it a cry for help when somebody does things like this. But we are in great danger if we continue to let this happen. And Trump has expressed no interest in letting this guy go, at least not publicly. You know what? I'm going to make a prediction right here because a lot of our predictions come true.
He's a TV personality.
We predicted that Trump was going to start threatening U.S. citizens with being sent to El Salvador. He's doing that now. I predict that within a week, Hegseth will be gone. That is my prediction. And you know what? It's a very gracious prediction because a lot of people don't think Trump has it in him to fire him. I think the pressure will be even too much for Trump to bear. So let's see. In a week, will Hegseth be gone, yes or no?
Yeah, I think you might be right because, like, there's a collision of priorities. Like, if his trade war turns into a war, then he has to have a competent military that can back up the war. And they're already positioning things, military might, so to speak, and they're not getting as much. I mean, they keep saying, we have 18 proposals from over 100 nations. I'm like, yeah, they're all from Russia. It's like, yeah, your tariffs are going great. They won't tell you what countries. I just think that it's kind of, they can't vamp forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of vamping here like, oh, yeah, everything's great. It's going to go great. I'm like, really not getting the cooperation and having countries fall into line and do all these deals. I mean, it's so anathema to the way geopolitics normally and ordinarily work, and that this administration is surprised people are forming new alliances. That's what free trade is. That's what it is in the world, and that's why you want to entice people to do trade with you, not be punitive. And the like groveling and people crawling on hands and knees to come and make some egregious concession, it's undignified, and the world knows it. So at a certain point, when you don't have people falling in line, you're going to have to like start making people do things by force. And I just don't think they can rely on this military leader to marshal that in a way that won't lead to piles of American bodies.
Unfortunately, yeah. All right, moving on, because there are a whole lot of people that are in this administration that are equal disasters. You ever have a game in your family, Kyle, where, you know, the toddler is put in charge of decisions for the day? Well, Marco Rubio is in charge of the State Department, in case that hasn't become abundantly clear. And he is now proposing the sweeping reorganization of the U.S. State Department that involves a wrecking ball of various sorts. I just wanted to read you one part of this. This is the guy, by the way, who said that, you know what, if Russia and Ukraine can't stop fighting, we're going to move on. We're just going to give up and not deal with it anymore. This is the administration that said, yeah, they can fix that war in one day. They found out it's hard, and now they want to give up. That should tell you everything you want to know.
I think it's beautiful.
What, that they're not going to help at all? That Ukraine is going to be decimated?
No, that it's complex, and they admit defeat. They're like, oh, this is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely.
Maybe some grown-ups should be handling this.
And hopefully some grown-ups will.
Uh-huh. It's like, yeah, Russia's not going to change their position, and Ukraine's pretty dug in, so, and they have a lot of support locally.
So what Rubio wants to cut, and this is something that is definitely worth looking at, he's targeting departments, and I'm not making this up, he's targeting departments that were involved in the global promotion of democracy and human rights. He's literally targeting democracy and human rights. These are his words. Yeah. Because he says, the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor became a platform for left-wing activists to wage vendettas against anti-woke leaders in nations such as Poland, Hungary, and Brazil. I don't know about Poland, but Hungary and Brazil have been run by some pretty right-wing extremists. So basically, to say this, that they people who are pro-democracy criticize right-wing authoritarian regimes, what the hell do you expect them to do? Of course they're going to do that. And they're going to criticize your regime because it's the exact same thing. And yeah, they're going to criticize Israel. Oh my God, clutch your pearls. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. So many people will suffer as a result. You know, they're shutting down embassies in Africa. I don't know what that's all about. I can't even follow their logic there. But they're literally just shutting down embassies throughout the entire continent as if it doesn't exist. Meanwhile, closer to home, hundreds have gathered at a forum at LIU, CW Post, seeking answers to the state of Social Security. A former top official of Social Security last night told Long Islanders he believes the elderly, people with disabilities, and others are likely to experience major interruptions in benefits in the near future because of recent agency layoffs by the Trump administration. All of this will ultimately cascade because they have now done away with 50% of the people in IT at Social Security. I truly believe that, according to Martin O'Malley, the Biden administration's commissioner of the federal agency, I truly believe it will result in some interruption in benefits for some period of time, and I believe that will happen probably in the very near future, like the next month or so. This was sponsored by Representative Tom Suozzi of Glen Cove and Laura Gillen of Rockville Center, both Democrats. They and other Democrats have rallied against the cuts, saying the reduced workforce would impact how the safety net agency delivers services to seniors and people with disabilities who rely on it. Of course, we have our Republicans here on Long Island, not the least of which is Representative Nick LaLota, who represents us here in Stony Brook, Republican from Amityville, who lives outside the district still, I believe. And also Representative Andrew Garbarino, Republican of Sayville, who say that it's a false assertion that this will happen to Long Island seniors, especially from a colleague who claims to seek bipartisan cooperation and serves only a partisan agenda and needlessly alarms our seniors. Well, Nick, again, what do you think is going to happen if you lay off 50% of the IT workforce for a vital agency? You think all those people were just wasting time? They didn't have any particular job to do? You know, you're backing up this regime. You pretend that you're fighting for people here, for their rights, for their tax money, but you go along with everything that Trump says. So this is on you as much as it's on him, because you're the local representative of Trump. And when there are problems with Social Security, it's you they're going to come for. It's your office they'll be outside. And rightfully so. Same thing with Andrew Garbarino and anybody who stands up for this nonsense that is going on. We can't have it. We can't allow Elon Musk to just march in, dismiss people he has no clue what they even do, decimate departments he doesn't understand, start spreading lies and all of that. Look, every week we're seeing more and more people show up in the streets. It's a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. And it's going to be a very powerful thing that will get our democracy back, that will put things the way they should be and not have people in fear for their lives, in fear for, being seen by ICE agents, in fear of losing their benefits. Those days will be over.
How is this not terrorism?
It's a form of terrorism, I think.
I want to see the anti-terror policies applied to the way this administration and their sycophants and mouthpieces locally are working. It's abject terror. You're terrorists.
Yeah, I mean, define what terrorism is. It's using fear and panic to put forward a political goal. And I see the fear, I see the panic, I see the force, I see the ignorance, I see all kinds of horrible things I never thought I'd see in this country. It might not be blowing things up, not yet anyway.
No, not yet.
It's something. Those days could be coming for sure.
Yeah, who knew that, the big windfall of jobs or your son's masculinity will be shaped by the next war, the next conflict that you'll be, signed up for.
We are out of time, unfortunately. That hour went fast, and I had so many more stories to get to. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. You can keep listening to WUSB. You can support WUSB by going to WUSB.fm. And if you know anything about boiled peanuts, warn me now before I open the can next week. I don't know exactly how we're going to do that, Kyle. I'm not sure if I should have a medic on hand.
I think we should rinse off the top. It's a little dusty.
Well, I'm not going to eat off the top of the can.
No, I know, but if you give it a little rinse, then when you open it, it's not like debris falling in. And then I think whatever's left over, we should just kind of simmer, just heat it up and have them warmed.
All right.
Later.
Well, we'll take your advice, listeners, otw@2600.com. We will see you again.
No, you take our advice.
Yes, we'll see you again next week. Good night.
Bye.
Bye. gotta fight for soul.